All right. Welcome everyone to the second session, part one of evening session of the Queen's Council on Developmental Disabilities Family Support Conference. I ask that everyone who signs on to keep their cameras off because we are offering ASL interpretation and just want to make it easier for folks to identify the interpreters. And so this is being recorded as well. So if you don't want your face seen, because it'll be available on our website later tomorrow, in addition to the PowerPoint presentation, we can do that as well. So you will be able to ask questions. You can put them in the chat and I will make sure that I read and get to all your questions. Please ask questions, especially during this really important topic. And hopefully we can get a lot of information out there. With that said, I would like to introduce tonight's presenter, Rachel Plotkis from AmeriKids. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Pat. Welcome, everybody. I'm so happy you can join us tonight. Huge thank you to the Queen's Council for putting this together. This year we have the ability to bring this to the families outside of Queens and at two convenient times. We chose to do two sessions because we want to be able to answer your questions. And I know some people sometimes don't like to ask questions. So maybe somebody else will ask the question that you wanted to ask, and I'll be happy to answer that. For any things that you want to take offline, my email and my phone number will be listed at the end. Feel free to reach out and we could speak sometime tomorrow. I'm honored again to be part of this council. Was working in Queens for many, many years. I was on the provider side for an OPWDG agency. So most of the members of the committee I've been working with for years, and I'm happy to be part of the committee as a co-chair for the Children's Committee. The committee recognized this year, it's always important to bring this information to the families. This year, very much so, because of program closings and the changes with the school, the services that are available are very important. We want to make sure you're aware of how to access them. So thank you, Pat, for doing this and all our interpreters. So very grateful that we're able to do this and have everybody be part of this very important meeting tonight. So again, I am part of a provider agency. I was at an agency for over 20 years. And then my journey took me to be part of the MSC to CCO change, which is a care coordination organization. So in addition to being involved with the Queens families for many years, I was able to be part of all the boroughs, Staten Island, Manhattan, and different areas of the state for the past few years, working with families and providers. So I do have a tremendous amount of resources and knowledge of what's needed, what's available, and how I can help the families get there. I'm very grateful for the leadership of AmeriCare for understanding the need to expand their children's program. They did before, but very much so now, asking me to join this effort with my knowledge of the OPWDD providers in the areas and knowing a lot of the care managers for the three downstate CCOs, I'm able to bring this information to the people that really need it. We know that there's so many changes this year and we wanna make this process as easy as possible for you. So although the services tonight being virtual work for us, for convenience, we're able to invite so many more families outside of the Queens area to join us tonight. Virtual doesn't always work for our kids. And that's why AmeriKids is so very important. A lot of the children are doing remote learning. And I'm gonna get into that in details in the slideshow, but this method of communicating doesn't always work. So we're going to get into that in a little bit. Please ask questions. I will go through the slide. If you raise your hand, Pat will tell me. And very important, especially so we don't get to the end and then you forget or don't get the opportunity to ask your questions. We have plenty of time. The slideshow is not very long. We made, we carved out an hour and a half just to be able to interact with everybody who's here and be able to answer your questions. So with that, we'll start. So AmeriKids is part of AmeriCare. That's our parent organization. The children's program right now works with over 400 children ages 3 to 17, providing relief to the families. Now, again, they were doing this before on a different level than we are doing this now. We are providing much more services in the home, probably than they've ever done before, and we will continue to do so. Next slide, please. Thanks. Okay, so where we provide service, all five boroughs, Westchester and Long Island, just Nassau County right as of now, more to come for Suffolk. We're available 7 days a week, 24 hours a day to answer your questions and get you the care that you deserve. So when supports and services start, there is customer service available at all times. I work with the families hands-on. We have a nursing department. Again, everybody is available by, we're a phone call away to help. So it's not that services start and then you don't hear from anybody. Things happen, schedules change. Maybe something happened, the home attendant might be have an emergency that they can't come. So we make sure that we're available to the families at all times. Flexible scheduling to assist with remote and hybrid education. Now, this is ever changing, right? So some kids have started school, maybe the school closed. We are trying to be as flexible as we possibly can under the circumstances, bringing the supports and services to the family when they need them. Next slide, please. Okay, the services we're providing. And this question came up this morning and I'm going to explain the difference. So we provide in-person, in-home nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, and home health aides. Somebody asked this morning if we provided respite and ComHab. Those are OPWDD waiver services. These are not. So we're going to get into that in a little bit more detail afterwards, but physical therapy, occupational therapy, and speech therapy might be available in the school or through Zoom. We are supplementing that service. We are not replacing it, but a lot of the schools cannot provide the in-person that some of the children need, and we are providing in-person. We have special training for our home health aides. They are trained to work with children with autism behaviors. So in addition to having the regular home health aid training, we have another level and we have a specialized curriculum with a nurse that has developed this to work with the families we support. This is the languages that we have available currently, ever growing. So if there is a language that is not seen here that you're in need, please reach out to us. There is different ways that we could work with your family and make sure that the language that's used in the household is available. Next slide, please. Okay, and I said this morning, this could be a workshop in itself. What I just pulled out the important points and information that I've gathered from families and educators in the area. Remote and hybrid learning has created hardships for students and families, right? A lot of our kids need to have routine and structure that has been disrupted, and the disruption wasn't replaced with something that was consistent. So we know that caused a lot of stress and regression in some cases in a lot of the households. Teachers, therapists, paras are roles that sometimes cannot be easily filled by parents who are also figuring out remote learning, working from home, or has other children in the household. Again, you know, understatement that if a parent is trying to work and now the child, it's time for speech therapy, it's not something that everybody could do, has the time to do, or is able to do that. I do want to share, and I didn't share this morning, our home health aides are not tutors or educators. However, but having the child be at the computer, be able to sit for the Zoom, redirect them, that's something that the home health aide could help with. Even a matter of keeping maybe the other children at their session, on their iPad, whatever. The dynamics of the household are different for everybody, but having that extra person in the home has been extremely helpful for so many families. Students at times can react badly to transition and regress when routines change, services are not being provided. During remote learning, schools cannot always commit to providing the full amount of service minutes outlined in the student's IEP. The remote option for services such as OT, PT, and speech is not always possible for specific students. AmeriKids is committed to supporting these families and students with all in-home services, which may be needed at this very difficult time. Okay, we went into this in great detail this morning, and I'm gonna talk about it again. So people are nervous about COVID. You know, what are the protocols at AmeriCare? Well, Penina, who is the vice president at AmeriCare, was on with us this morning, and she outlined how AmeriCare never closed, never stopped supporting services throughout from the beginning of COVID. They made sure that all the PPE was available. They, and Pat, remind me if I missed anything, that it was dropped off at the patient's homes to make sure that everything was there and available for when the aides got there. They had masks and they had gowns and they had everything that was needed at the time to make sure that not only was our staff safe, but the patients and the family members of the homes we were going into. I had to do training when I started there. Everybody has training of the proper use for the PPE and disposing and all the safety precautions that that are outlined. And they take that, there's another level of it in this case, because you have a company that's protecting both the staff and the people that they're supporting. Following social distancing when you can, providing constant education. And we will always prioritize delivering exceptional service to our patients while also looking out for the safety needs of our staff. Very important. We remain ready and willing to support our children and their families during this time. This is the difference between the services we are providing and a lot of programs that had to close and couldn't provide services for different regulations. So when we start working with a family, you know, not the staffing or things like that, there's going to always be somebody available to work with the family and children. Oh, okay. We have, I'm sorry, go back. We have a question before we go on. That's fine. I'm sorry. Can I see the question? Okay. Very important. Thank you for that. If the family wanted the staff tested before entering the home, that's something that's available. There's testing at our headquarters for that purpose and to satisfy the families that have that request. Thank you for reminding me of that. Okay, so here's the referral process. And I do want to mention that I know everybody's circumstances are different. I have, and I'm just gonna give an example. If a child's coming out of early intervention, not yet in the OPWD system as of yet, evaluations, Medicaid, all of that is something that I review with the family prior. So each case is specific. So I'm giving general information, but if you have a specific circumstance, I'd love to just talk to you about it or work with your care manager to see where you are in the process so that we could figure out the fastest way to start working with your family. So we do provide services up until a child is 18. However, the application process could only be through the 16th birthday. There's another mechanism for getting home care in the homes after, before the 18th birthday. And I can also help the families with that. It's just that they couldn't fall under our program, those children. It's a Medicaid-funded service, so the child should have or willing should be willing to apply for Medicaid. Although OPWDD does not have to approve or facilitate our service, the child must be known and eligible to receive OPWDD services. The child must have gone to see their doctor within 90 days, a face-to-face visit. And with that, I do want to share that families that did not want to go to their doctor's office for COVID, we have made arrangements with the pediatrician's office to go before the office gets busy or after. So pediatricians have been great for families that were concerned about this, and they were seeing their patients, you know, in times that there was nobody in the waiting room, which was very helpful. Upon receiving referral, our team will immediately work with our team and family to expedite the start of these very important services. Next slide, please. We have partnerships with many different OPWD agencies and the three CCOs in the area, Advanced Care Alliance, Tri-County, and Care Design. Families that need assistance can benefit from our experience. We are dedicated professionals with experience working with OPWD provider agencies and with care coordination organizations. The process after early intervention can sometimes be overwhelming, so we assist the families and link them to the correct agency that can assist with their specific needs. So, I can go into 20 examples, but if we have a family in Brooklyn that only speaks Spanish, we have somebody that can help them with that. If we have a family in the Bronx that speaks Mandarin, we have collaborated with many different agencies to meet the needs of those families in order to get services started. So it helps get these families to the CCO if they're not there already. And it helps get them these much needed services in the home. Here's my information. If you can email me, you can call me. If you go to, Pat, can you put it in the chat, please? The AmeriCareNewYork.com. Please, for me, thanks. If you go to the AmeriCare website under the children's program, there is a link which looks like this to make a referral, complete this form. That goes, it's a live link. You put in all the information and then we will get back to the family. A care manager could do it. The family could do it themselves. Pediatrician, whoever's filling out the referral. This way, I know a lot of the care managers are working from home, so we don't have to worry about faxes and scanners and copy machines, printers. This takes away all of that. Anybody that knows me knows I am very hands-on. I call back all the families or care managers, and we're trying to get this done, again, as quickly as possible. We know how important this is. That is my presentation. I'd love to hear from anybody who has a question. Was anybody here this morning that there's something that we didn't discuss or something they thought about after maybe?
Hi, Rachel, can I ask a question?
Sure. What's your name?
Kebanu.
Hi.
I also am with QCDD. Okay. How do you know how many sessions of a child is getting? Who makes that decision? Agency or no. The doctor?
The nurse and the pediatrician.
So who does that eval? You all do the eval?
The nurse does. So after... if somebody makes a referral, I work with the pediatrician's office to explain the need, and then the nurse will go in and do an evaluation. Once the nurse does the evaluation of the dynamics of the household, so it changes because we have some people with five kids in the household, right? Three of them have disabilities. So depending on the dynamics of the household, the amount of hours is determined. Now, keep in mind that prior to all of this, children were in school and they were in after school programs. So the need for a home health aide might've been an hour in the morning to help the child get ready, maybe an hour, you know, when they got back from school or after school. That's changed now. So the time being, there's no after school, not many schools. A lot of children aren't in school 5 days a week for the hours that they were before. So it's very much different, and it's on a case by case basis. So person-centered planning applies here too, which is great.
I'm a professional and a mother. So been there, done it. When it came to getting somebody in the morning, it was kind of impossible to get somebody for one and a half hours, which would have been the best thing in the world. Because that is the time we dress the person and we look after them. And physically, it was so, so challenging for us. And nobody ever got anybody. So are you all able to find somebody who's willing to work for just 1.5 hours?
Well, that's, again, based on the household, but we can be very creative, right? Is there a college student that lives up the block that the family trusts that we can train and can hire to work with that family? So, you know, based on where that household is, who's involved with that family, we can always think outside the box to try to get that need filled. Now, somebody is not going to travel, you know, 2 hours on a train or a bus to work for an hour and a half, but a neighbor might, somebody that lives close by. So that's the point of, you know, talking to the families, asking the questions, getting the team involved to see how could we help this family with this obstacle.
And also the therapies are done, evaluation is done by the nurse.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for the question.
You close the doors at 18 years.
The application process is at the end of the 16th birthday at 18. And I'm working on this because at 18, the cases go to CASA, and then it's up to the agency that CASA chooses. I'm working with, I've reached out to HRA to try to see if we could fix that. Also, the managed care organizations, some of them have like a pediatric to adult program that might be a better fit. So at least the families are not just randomly going from somebody they've worked with for years into, you know, a bucket here, whoever, you know, they're chosen to work with. So that's something that I am working on. So more to come on that, but I don't have. So right now I'm working with CDPAP provider and CASA for when the children reach 18. So at least it's some kind of smooth transition for the families.
Because after the age of 21, the kids get nothing. They just drop.
But that's we're going to save that workshop for another day. That's the managed care part that we're going to get into, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't give you therapy or anything for the individuals who have finished training. I mean, I'm not here to hold an argument. But
yeah, yeah.
They don't. Our kids after the age of 21 just fall through the cracks and they really, really suffer. And that's the time you need therapy more, because that's the time a mother can't do the therapy for the child.
Sure. Could we put that, could we save that for the next one of the council, or just to talk offline about that? Because that's a pretty important thing that I'd love to talk about. Yeah. And to
our
see
kids get nothing. A 45-year-old right. individual gets no help. That is the reason why they're in the wheelchair when they were not in the wheelchair, because they don't get that anybody coming up to them to teach them to walk, to help them to walk. Their parents are then 70 and 80, and their parents
right.
can do nothing
that's,
for them.
And you're saying that's the most important time. I agree with you. So as a community for the parents and providers, this is why, and again, this is a workshop for another day, and people that know me know, like I was involved with that pretty much. This is for the managed care organizations that are up and coming to understand this piece, because the whole point of HMASPIC and Partners Health Plan and the CPLs is for this information to get to these managed care corporations that, you know, that know what is important and where the services are getting dropped. So this is something that is very important. And I don't want to just say we need to talk about this, because I was there. PHP is very familiar with the need for this, but all the providers need to be, right, for the future. So more to come on that. Thank you for bringing that up. Yes, thank you. Okay, is there another one, Pat?
No, just that one question we had earlier regarding if a child is receiving therapy in school, if they were eligible to also receive therapy at home.
Right. So, and I answered right. So this is supplementing that service. Keep in mind now different, you know, and I'm answering this very generally because there's different parts of the city that are providing services in a different way. So some have offered to send the in-person, the services in the home. And sometimes it's happened, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it started and then it dropped, or they, you know, people weren't comfortable going into the homes anymore. So every circumstance is different. So that's why it's very important that if your child's in need of the service, put it in. You're not gonna lose it at the school. And just let us see what is that. You're allowed to have both. It's a supplement to that. It's not replacing. And for the time being, as we know, these services are not being fulfilled as they should be on the IEP. They can't for whatever reason. This is an opportunity to get the additional support.
If anyone has questions.
Yeah, just one more. So piggybacking on what you just said, was you're going to do it as supplementing. What yes. if, God bless, everything turned out well and we were back to normal, whatever normal is. And would you yet continue giving the service to the parent who's getting services at school?
It depends. Has the child returned to school? You know, each yes. household is different.
Yes. Child has returned to school.
Child returns to school. Is this school now? Is the school providing it as yes. much as they should? Okay. So that is a supplement to the service. So it still remains the frequency and how much. Again, you don't know. Parents could say, "All right, that's enough now. I don't want anybody in the house." You know, the child's at school. Child's at after school. So it depends on the household really and the dynamics of the household. If the child is in school and in after school and then gets ComHab, maybe there's no time for it. So again, on a case by case basis, is it going to be ripped from the family? No, but it's going to be readjusted. Yeah.
Thank you.
And just remember, waiver services, and this is different. So the ComHab worker and the aide will not be in the house at the same time. They're both fulfilling different needs for that family. Respite, different service, right? We're not going to be there at the same time and filling a different need for that family. And the greatest thing for me is being able to understand the difference in explaining that to the families, right? Because my background is in waiver services and OPWDD services. So bringing this in as a supplement is for many people, it's a great answer to problems that we've had in the past. You know, and again, I can go on and on. When a child is going from EI to getting to the CCO, right? So let's just go from March till now. A lot of people were working from home. Maybe they couldn't get to a CCO. They didn't know how to get to a CCO. A lot of families needed some guidance to get to the front door. Only because of the way school abruptly ended. So, you know, by us working with the schools and the families and getting them linked to the CCOs, now it's the people that might have just stopped getting any kind of service or stopped the process where they were in like March. Okay, what happened now? Where was I? So many things have happened in people's lives. They've lost jobs. They forgot that they had the evaluation in March or April. And now the evaluations that they had prior to that are all outdated. They were trying to be proactive and get these evaluations and then something happened and they don't have them. So now they need new ones. And it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming for a lot of families. And so we tried to say, okay, where are you at? Okay, you got to the CCO, perfect. Where are you with this? Do you have your evaluation? So that's where this is very helpful to help them get back on track, right? So hopefully when things are resolved and everybody gets caught up, you know, that service won't be so much needed anymore. But in the meantime, because of the way things ended and people weren't sure where they finished off, that's where the confusion comes in. So I'm happy to be able to help the families with that. And a lot of agencies didn't have staff. There was, you know, a shortage because of maybe some staff were afraid to go into the homes and vice versa. And some families didn't want people in their homes. So all of that, I feel like now people are accepting people in the home because we have the precautions. And they weren't aware of what the safety measures were in place for these aides. So now that we have that information, and I think people are a little bit more comfortable, I think it'll run smoother here on in.
Can you just explain what care coordination is, just in case someone is not familiar with it, who's not in the system, so to speak?
Sure. So let's start with an EI family. So a child received early intervention services, and now they're aging out, and they're going to an 853 school or a school within District 75. And at that point, people have mentioned that you need, or either at the, when they were at the EI or at the school, that they would be eligible for OPWDD services. So in order to get OPWDD services, you need to be working with an organization that provides you with a care manager, and those are called care coordination organizations. In the past, they were called Medicaid service coordinators, and they help the family develop a plan to get OPWDD services for the child. Some of the waiver services available to the children are respite. Respite right now for, you know, families would need respite out of home or in-home respite, which really is a service for the family. You know, and there's many different examples of that. If there's an emergency in the within for the parents have to go to a funeral and the child needs care or an operation or something like that, that would be an emergency respite situation. But for even on the weekend, mom needs to go do her shopping or needs to catch up on certain things or be with her other children, or perhaps she's caring for an elderly parent, respite is a great service for the families. So those services are called OPWD waiver services. In order to get those services, you need to have a care manager. So after EI, after a child would no longer be eligible for EI services, if they are in special ed, you would get either you would have evaluations from EI or you would get new ones, and we would help you do that. Or would a non-Medicaid service coordinator could help somebody do that, and I can explain that as well. So once you have, you're working with a care manager at one of these CCOs, there is an assessment called an IM assessment. An IM assessment is done to develop something called a life plan with the family. And that is the goals for the child, what the child wants, the needs for the child to become as independent as possible. So the care manager works with the family, the team, is part of the hub of the village of services, the village that will be part of the child's life. So many different OPWD agencies, home care agencies, doctors, family members, natural supports, neighbors. So the services are endless. As we know, now because of the care coordination organizations, it's not just limited to OPWD services. Again, that's a workshop for another day. But to get on the right track, to be able to navigate these services, to have a care manager is one, it's absolutely necessary to be an OPWDD, and it helps the families kind of go through what I'm talking about. I'm throwing a lot of information at everybody. And that's why I prefer, you know, if you have a care manager, I'd be happy to talk with you and the care manager to see exactly where you're at. because although OPWD eligibility is a requirement to get our services in the home, they don't have to be in place. We can provide those services as long as the individual is deemed eligible. And the way you're deemed eligible is by those evaluations that you would have after EI that you would get done. And what you need is a psychological, psychosocial within, might be 3 years and 2 years. Am I correct, somebody? I think it's in the last 3 years for the psychological. Somebody have a question?
Someone actually typed in a question wanting to know, are these services only available to those individuals with straight Medicaid?
So that, again, on an individual basis, if you want to put in a referral or call me or email me and I will go over that. The difference is, so there's the Medicaid issue is very different than the managed care for the children. You know, we were just talking about managed care for the adults, for the children, it's different for our services. And the managed care organizations have their own method of providing these services. So again, it's on a case-by-case basis. I'll be happy to go over that with you.
Okay. Also, I guess since we're on that subject in terms of Medicaid, in terms of insurance, if a family's not eligible for OPWDD, do you handle with private insurance?
The child most likely wouldn't qualify if they did not have a disability for services in the home.
Okay.
But I have come across in the last few weeks children with not with different disabilities, physical or OMH. So I'm able to refer them elsewhere, but they have to have a qualifying disability to get the services in the house. I want to go back to an insurance question because it's pretty important. Third-party insurance, dad's a cop, mom's a teacher, the child is on their insurance, but they have OPWDD services, so they have Medicaid. They have Medicaid and they have mom or dad's GHI, right? For this example, it's fine. They don't have to get rid of the third-party insurance. That is acceptable. So, you know, when parents, that's a common question that I get is that I have my child, the pediatrician's on the GHI, but they're getting OPWD services through Medicaid, absolutely fine.
Okay, just another one. You get the OPWDD services, but you're not legally in the country. You don't have a green card. Are you going to give us services?
You have OPWD, do you have Medicaid?
No, you don't have Medicaid because the parents don't have a green card and the child is not born in this country. OPWDD will make it eligible. They will do the evaluations. They will give you the OPWDD, but they won't give you the services. Will you give them the services?
Well, I don't know. Don't know because they don't have, do they have the Medicaid for medical?
To my knowledge, generally no. They could probably with help get Medicaid waiver, but generally no. And they get eligible, they get the paperwork for OPWDD, but they don't get any services or anything for it. So it doesn't matter how much the parents are earning, whether they're paying taxes, they're not legally in the country. Are you going to give the services? Organizations do.
Well, no, but we bill Medicaid. So I don't, again, don't hold me to it, but I'm not sure that we could, but let me go back. So I thought for medical services, children that don't have documentation is still entitled to Medicaid. Am I wrong?
I'm not sure. That's what I'm saying.
So that's the difference between the OPWG waiver, Medicaid, okay. and this, because this is, I guess, considered medical. Again, that's something I would have to look into on, you know, for a specific case. But to my knowledge, even from when I was on the provider side, a child could get for medical, they could get Medicaid.
Okay, because they are calling me and asking me for help for respite and for home health aid, and they're not getting it. So that's why I'm asking, can I send them to you?
Yeah, please do. Please do, because I'm interested in knowing how that could work. So wait, stay with me on that thought. So when we had adults, they would get like non-waiver enrolled back, they would get state-funded services. There was the difference. Back when in OPWG, when I was on the provider side, if somebody was undocumented, they were entitled to state-funded service, correct?
How long ago are you talking about?
A few years ago. If somebody lived in a state-operated and they were undocumented, didn't they get state-operated dollars?
It was some time ago, things were different.
Yeah.
I have a family who's got OPWDD. She has everything set for her child, but now she's petrified. The child is about 17. She's not going to get any services once the child turns 21. So if she had come to you at the age of about 12, would you have been able to give her any services at home?
That I don't know, but now I'm interested in knowing if CASA is going to pick up that case for 18. It's the same premise. If they have Medicaid from medical, will CASA pick that up? Send me the information and maybe we can get somebody at HRA to help them.
Okay.
Right? Because that's CASA and HRA, and that's New York City Medicaid. So, and it's a medical thing. So we can figure it out.
And any borrowers.
There's an answer for everything. Remember I told you the neighbor up the block, we're going to figure it out. There's an answer always.
Everybody has a neighbor up the block. I never had.
Well, I'm just saying there's always this kind of thing outside the box.
I know there are lots of answers. I always give the ideas to parents, but it's not as easy as one does when you live with a child with special needs.
Right. No, I know. That's why I tried to make sure that we've, you know, tried everything, every scenario. You know, and that's why I'm here, because I don't, over the years, and there's been a lot of times that I've hit roadblocks with families for different circumstances. And, you know, we try to find the answer. That's why working with this organization, I'm able to fill a need for some of these families that OPWD doesn't provide for them, right? Or children that are in between EI and OPWDD, they're not there yet. So, but they're eligible for services. So this is something that could help families right now. They don't have to wait. They don't have to wait for the IM, the life plan, ComHab. They don't have to wait for all that. Respite, you know, a staffing problem, programs, we're not providing the service this whole time. So, you know, it's nice to know that AmeriCare was still operating and providing services when all the other agencies couldn't. So I'm sure a lot of those families were very happy that they were there and able to do this safely, right? Made sure that the staff and the families were protected during this time. So that's, to me, that I, you know, I have a lot of respect for them that they were able to do this.
Okay, I'm going to talk to the families. I don't know how many of them are willing to come across, because everything is so highly confidential, but I will talk to them and ask them if they're interested in to call you.
And you could do, if you want, if they, you know, if they try, we could do a three-way call too. That would be fine.
Okay, I'll talk to them.
Definitely. Very good. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Nobody else? That's it?
More questions?
It's the same thing like this morning. They're going to get 45 minutes of their night back. Right.
That is true.
I have a question.
Oh, here we go.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. My son is going, he is 17, going 18 soon. So if I need help like what you're providing for younger children, where do I go? You mentioned something about CASA. I don't know what that is.
Okay. So I'll be happy to explain that. Do you have a care manager? Are you with one of the CCOs?
Yes, I do have.
Okay. So I'm going to give you this information. Care manager can reach out to me as well if they're not familiar with the process. There's a form called an M11Q.
M11Q, okay. Yep.
And that gets filled out by your doctor. Mm-hmm. The visit has to occur within the last 30 days when you send it in.
Okay.
And you're writing this down. I'm going to give you a fax number. I'm sorry?
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. So the fax number for CASA is 212-666-1747.
1747, okay.
Okay, and then they take over. So what I was describing before is that goes to all the home care agencies. Could be AmeriCare, it could be Preferred, it could be Extended, it could be any of them. And the same process that we do, the nurse will come in and evaluate your circumstance. Then they take it from there. So age 17 and up goes through CASA right now. And
is that just for home attendant or home health aide, or is it for also for therapists?
I do not know. Now, the CASA handles the home health aide, but the agency coming in might have the therapies.
Gotcha. Okay. They might have like your outfit.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I ask, what is the difference between St. Mary's and you?
I'm sorry?
What is the difference between an agency like St. Mary's and what is the difference between your agency?
St. Mary's does the care at home waiver.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's different. So that would be different than the OPWD waiver. That's the care at home waiver. And so, that's more medically, a lot of the children at St. Mary's have more medical needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you couldn't go to both sides, that would be double dipping?
I don't know. If they're in the care at home waiver, I think it's a separate code on their Medicaid. I don't even think we'd be able to take it. I think, because when you pull up the care at home waiver, so when the Medicaid is pulled for the children we're supporting, they usually have the 95. The care at home waiver is a different code.
Because St. Mary's offers the therapies and stuff like that, but they don't really offer, yes, they do offer care at home also.
Yeah,
the care at home. They do, yeah.
So once upon a time, again, for another day, they thought that when the health home came, that everything was gonna come together, but I don't see that happening.
I don't think it's becoming any easier for families. I thought it was much, much easier. My son is 30. I thought I got things far more easier than families get today.
And that's why I'm here. And that's why I was part of all of the changes, and people know that. And that's why I'm here to help. My knowledge and the relationships I've built over the years, I feel like I can help the families get to where they need to go a lot quicker, right? So, and I don't always have the answers, but I get them. And I have very grateful for the provider relations experience that I got prior to me coming here. I can get the answer from the providers of what is needed. I feel like I have a very good relationship with many people, and the goal is to not have the families, you know, unnecessarily wait if there's something that we can do. And I was very impressed over COVID. There was agencies that were providing the evals remotely, you know, for the updates and stuff. And we know is that best practice? Probably not. It had to get done, right? So at least we were able to get things done. Now the next one hopefully will be in person, and things will go back to a little bit more normal. But I agree with you. I want families to be able to get the support that they need. And I want to get them to where they need to go while getting some support in the house. And that's really the goal, right? To get some help here, tell you where your next step is, and get you to the CCO and have a great care manager and be able to, you know, get the supports and services that your family needs. I have to say, I'm doing this, I know I look very young, but I've been doing this a really long time. And I had children in my Saturday children's play group. And they came in when they were just coming out of EI, and I was able to help the families choose an agency, you know, choose a group home. You know, so that I had been able to see families, you know, get the supports that they need to their satisfaction as well, you know. And I tell families all the time, I did when we were in MSC, do not wait for an emergency to happen or when something happens and you have no choice. Start looking around, see which agencies have residential programs. What kind of environment can you see your child in? And I always say, just start looking to what's around. Start, you know, just, you know, the environment, talk to other families, get involved. And the parents know that's the best recommendation you're gonna get from another mom or dad. And they're gonna be very honest with you. So those are the types of things that I was able to see. And some families had a hard time accessing services and we've helped them. Some didn't, you know, it depends on where you are, what supports and services are available. Now, I feel like more than 25 years ago, the internet is so very helpful. Provider associations, parent support groups, Facebook, however parents are getting their information and sharing information, is a lot easier. But I agree what you're saying. It's harder. The change from MSC to CCO was very difficult for some people. And I understand that. I understand the frustration, but together we could figure it out. The Queen's Council's great place. So happy to be involved with it. And I thank you for bringing these things up. And I feel like every time we're hearing of something that parents are struggling with, you know, we'll try to figure it out and help and make suggestions.
Yeah, I completely agree that parents need to apply for whatever they have to before you need it. I give a lot of workshops, and one of them I always tell them, fill up the camp form, fill up the respite form, fill up the overnight. You're not emotionally ready, never mind.
Right.
I said, I had my son enrolled for anything and everything under the sun. I didn't have to use anything, but if I wanted to, it was already there. You know, the T's were crossed, the I's were dotted. I had all the paperwork for him enrolled for whatever I could get for him. And he's really, really medically challenged. So I really used a lot of the stuff, but I always tell families, it's very, very necessary to fill up every single form and not wait for a rainy day.
Yeah. And the evals, always keep them updated. You know, they say, like, you know, always have them updated just in case. You never want to be so, oh, okay, we can't take you till the evals are done. You know, then there's a 3-month wait for evals, you know, so these are the things that we don't want to hear. Thank you for that.
Thank you. I have to step out to go into another.
Thank you for the great questions. Anybody else?
Take care, everybody.
Thank you. Take care.
I see you tomorrow, Pat.
Yes.
Okay. So I want to thank everybody. Reach out.
So actually, I there was a couple more questions.
Oh, great.
In terms of the service area, is it for all 5 boroughs? And I'll go and ask if it also includes Nassau and Suffolk County, just in case someone has family in other counties.
Nassau, yes. Suffolk right now, no. We don't have enough staff for Suffolk for me to comfortably say that we can provide that service. So definitely Nassau and the 5 boroughs and parts of Westchester.
So the other question is, how long is the process take to get the service? I guess from referral to actually getting the service, from intake to service.
Okay, so great question. This week, the ones that some were processed successfully in a day, and some I'm still working on since last month. The reason being the pediatrician not filling it out. We do our best to follow up. Some of the pediatricians that are with these ginormous facilities, it's very hard to get somebody on the phone. So, but we are constantly following up. The best thing I tell the parent is please, you know, call over there. I'm calling over there. That there's a holdup if the doctor isn't getting the paperwork back. If you have a great doctor, like I've had this week, some great doctors, one day, boom, we have it. The challenge is that visit has to be within the 90 days. So a lot of the children, please forgive my dog barking. A lot of the children have had their annual because it was back to school. So we're still within that 90 days, which is helpful. Otherwise, for children that went last January or February, we're going to have to ask that they see their doctor in order to get the referral processed. So it's within 90 days. Doctor has to get that back. We do follow up, but that could be a challenge. And the Medicaid status. So that's why the second I get a referral, we run the Medicaid and we work with the family, the care manager, if there's anticipate of a problem. So a problem that I had, and it upset me horribly, was because I just explained to you that third party insurance, which is the family's insurance, would not be a problem. In this one circumstance, it was an out-of-state third-party provider that had some kind of stipulation that you had to use an in-network provider only. So in other words, if you have GHI, we put the claim in, they don't take us, they deny it, Medicaid picks up that claim for the service. This particular provider wouldn't deny it. They would send, they would make the patient, the child, go to a provider that they chose. So that obstacle caused us not to be able to serve the family. So it wasn't the Medicaid, it was the private insurance that the family had for the child. I'm sorry if that's confusing, but that was the private insurance caused the problem with us providing services. So it's the doctor, the insurance, and if there was no visit in 90 days is the only holdup. If the child went to the doctor within 90 days and there's nothing preventing the Medicaid or the private insurance from going through, the intake calls the family, finds out a mutually convenient day with the nurse goes in, does the evaluation for what services and what hours are gonna, services are gonna be provided. And then the services could start the following week. So it is a relatively quick process if all those things are in order. But I have to tell you, it's a lot easier than some of the obstacles that we have had to go through to get other services. You know, we're not dealing with evaluations being outdated. We don't have to wait months and months and months to get an evaluation to get a service. Staffing isn't a problem. And if there is a problem with staffing, there's workarounds like I described before. Perhaps there's an aide or somebody that's willing to be an aide to work with the family. So those are the challenges that I could share as of now. And it's not many. So, and very hands-on, as I said, I'm involved in the process. My benefits and entitlements, we work very closely together. We review all the cases every morning to see where the challenges are. And she helps me when things get backed up and how we, you know, how we can move these cases along.
Okay, so someone is asking, and I'm trying to decipher. So they were asking if a family, the caregiver at home can be a home aide, considered a home health aide, or for a neighbor's family member.
Sure. Yep, so, just not a parent. It can't be the parent. Aunt, cousin, neighbor, fine, can't be the parent. And we, the hiring process is 3 weeks, same screening as if the person was a regular employee of AmeriCare. They come, background check, screening, 3 week certification, learns what I was describing, our training program, gets a certificate for them to keep, free of charge, nothing, this is, the course, the home health aid course, is something some organizations charge for. We don't, free of charge, 3 weeks. The person is certified by us and they could work with that family that they were that of the choosing. So that you know, we don't, they're just, they could just work with that family.
Okay. And just to piggyback on that, the individual, whoever that person is, whether it's, it could be a sibling, a friend, but they would have to be over 18, right? Just to,
yes. Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that in case anyone had that question as well. And also, regardless of if it is a family member, they still have to go through that whole process.
Yeah. So, because they are an employee, they get a paycheck from AmeriCare.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Hope that answers the parents' question. We have a little time for one or two more, I guess. If anyone has a question. I did put in the chat earlier the email address for Rachel and also the website for AmeriCare, AmeriCare New York, ny.com. And again, this will be available, as well as the PowerPoint will be available on the Queens Council's website at some point tomorrow. Or definitely by Monday. So if you miss anything, you can always watch this again. So,
thank you.
So it looks like that's it for questions. First, thank you again to our interpreters, both Spanish and Mandarin interpreters, as well as our two fabulous, not to say that our language interpreters aren't fabulous, they are, they do something that I definitely can't do, but thank you as well to our ASL interpreters who've been doing a phenomenal job as well. That concludes our session for this evening. Hopefully some of you will join us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. for Laugh Yoga. That should be fun and interesting. So everyone have a good night and we will see you all tomorrow.
Thank you, everybody.